Welcome to Creative Disturbance. Audio Labs.
Rencontre avec.
Rencontre avec.
Meeting.
Meeting.
Martin O'Brien.
Let's start by a short presentation of Martin O'Brien, 3-hour performance, Taste of Flesh by Me, I'm Yours, that has been curated by Jerry Dass for Arts Catalyst. So a rectangular, transparent plastic tent had been erected in the venue. The artist, who was half naked and confined in a straight jacket, was attached to a chain wrapped around the central pole. His head was covered with a green swimming cap, and for an hour, on his knees, he dipped his head into a bowl of green paint, slowly unrolling the chain and painting the floor. Surrounding him, that is, in the same space, was the audience, who began moving to avoid the paint, the man, and the chain. Different sequences followed this opening one, like a series of chapters that were fully script. The most emblematic one, which gives its title to the performance, is when O'Brien began to bind the audience before inviting the people to bind him back. Martin O'Brien uses physical endurance, disgust, and elements relating to his illness of cystic fibrosis in his creation. In this performance, he wanted to address the fear of contamination associated with a sick body, highlighting recent public anxiety around the risk of infection and the surge in depictions of a zombie in popular culture.
Just me. I'm an artist.
So the performance, Taste of Flesh, yeah. Me, I'm Yours, where you created in London on April the 18th, 2015, has been organized by Arts Catalyst in the framework of a Trust Me, I'm an Artist project. Mm-hmm. And Trust Me, I'm an Artist is dealing with issues of biomedicine, ethics, and art. Biomedicine and art are at the core of your creation, so maybe could you tell us what those words mean to you and how you implement them, so to speak, in your work?
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of my engagement with biomedicine, like on a day-to-day level, of course, because I have cystic fibrosis, so, you know, really the way I understand biomedicine, I guess, is as a sort of form of contemporary, let's say, like Western medical practices. So, you know, with cystic fibrosis, there's a kind of whole fairly complex routine of medication that I take every day and various things to like loosen mucus on my lungs. So it's a disease where the body produces excess mucus, essentially, but excess bodily fluids, but particularly mucus that like blocks up different organs in the body. And it's chronic, so it isn't curable, but it's just, you know, treated by different medications. So my engagement with biomedicine, you know, on one level, like as a day-to-day thing, is through the taking of medicines and through just being like a chronically sick body. You know, and I think now for quite a while I've been working with that as the basis of my art practice, so thinking about how my art actually jumps from that starting point of my own body as a chronically ill one and what's possible within the space of performance. You know, what's possible within that like space of performance art in relation to these kind of medical practices, what it allows for me to do by working within an art practice that jumps from biomedicine, you know. And one of the main things for me is this idea of agency or ownership. So somehow performance becomes a space in which I can claim some ownership over my own body, or claim sort of agency over my body, which in a way biomedicine takes away from. Although, you know, that my having to submit to particular medical regimes in day-to-day life in order to stay alive, I mean, it's important that I do that, but it kind of takes away, you know, it's me giving some form of ownership away from my own body to medicine in some to some extent. So,
why did you choose endurance performance? Because mm-hmm. Going also through pain.
Yeah.
To regain this control on your body.
I think there's something, you know, within pain-based or endurance-based practices, which is a absolutely sort of direct, claim of ownership on the body. So, by using your body in those particularly painful ways, it kind of demands your right to own it. So it's it screams out, "This is what I'm doing with my body because my body's mine." Others are. A very visceral and kind of direct claim of agency over the body by doing those particular acts, like in pain-based or endurance, I think specifically, more than other things.
And in this pushing the your own limits, where did you put the audience, man? Was the audience just as a witness?
No, I think it's fairly complex relationship with spectators that I have, because there's something in me that means I really need the spectators within the space, that that the work for me, my work anyway, only exists with the spectators there, that I need them in order for the work to happen. And I guess that's where the politics of it lies as well, is the way in which the practice sort of touches other people. It's like the claiming of agency in front of other people, which is more more important, I think, for me than, if I was doing a marathon on my own, where there's no engagement actually with spectatorship, but here, the other person and that relationship between the viewer and me is really, it's complicated, and I find it quite hard to really talk about what it is, but it's an important part of the practice that they're present in the same space as me. And while this is going on, so they're witness, they're witness, and also they're kind of complicit as well in what I'm doing.
Somehow you put the responsibility of what you're doing on them also, I think. No,
probably not purpose, but I think there's something about this sort of work that absolutely does that. That if you're in the space, you've got some responsibility, or that they have. They're complicit within the work, the thing that I'm doing. It can only happen if everybody left, if nobody came to see it. I mean, I would still be doing it, I guess, in the hope that other people would come, but to be, they wouldn't really be partaking in it. So they would remove themselves from it. But by being in the space, they're sort of allowing that to happen.
So let's come to this Taste of Flesh by Me, I'm Yours performance that we experienced.
Yeah,
I think we can say we, you, but us too, yesterday. So which is unanimously considered to be a little bit different from what you do normally. Because you involve more, said yesterday yourself, it was more of a participatory performance where the audience is more involved, choreographed. So can you explain what happened, what you designed, and why?
So usually the work that I make, the space is fairly demarcated. So this is my space that I'm performing in, and the spectators are in the same room, but they're I might have a white floor and they're on a different coloured floor. There's a very clear separation. And what I was becoming increasingly interested in was this idea of infection, and how we might think about that, not necessarily a literal infection, but how that might be a useful metaphor for thinking about the relationship between me and my audience, so how I might infect them. That they're a sort of witness to the work, but how I might somehow break that and not necessarily ask for participation, but involve, so that infect them, get inside under their skin, that they become infected by the work or brought in, by the work in that way. It works like a plague or that kind of thing. So I designed this space in which, when the audience were in it, I was tied to the pole in the middle of the room, and I would move around, and each lap of the pole, the chain that was attached with, would go further out and I could reach different parts of the space. So I designed it as a space where I could reach every wall in the space. So anywhere a spectator stood, they would have to move or they would have to negotiate their like presence with me. There'd be like some sort of forced interaction as I moved around the space. But I think it came from a couple of things. Yeah, firstly was the idea that I wanted to think about infection and actually getting into the audience and how that might be useful for thinking about illness if the audience are actually infected by the artist. And then secondly was some collaborations I've been doing with the artist Cherie Rose, who's an LA-based artist in her 70s now, who was famous, who became famous during the 80s and 90s for work with Bob Flanagan, who died of cystic fibrosis. And they did a whole series of performances, which were really about their relationship that was masochistic, so she was the mistress and he was a slave. And they used sort of BDSM activity and pain to think about illness and think about his mortality. And in the last sort of 5 years, Cherie and I have connected and we've done 5 performances together now, where we've been thinking about their legacy and I've become a sort of substitute for Bob because he died in the mid-90s. And so I've been sort of taking on his role somehow within this relationship, you know, just within the performances. But quite one of the things that she's been really interested in is interaction with the audiences. So some of the work I've been doing with her has involved this participation with spectators, and it's something I was always quite shy of doing, or not really that interested in. But I guess through working with her, where she said, I want to involve the audience, I sort of went, oh, okay, let's do it then. But actually, I've sort of discovered something through that is quite exciting about how my relationship might be to the audience.
Yesterday, the feeling, and I don't think it's only mine, was that you were... the audience was strongly manipulated and strongly under your control.
Yeah.
And that we were kind of puppets played by you.
Yeah.
Even if the design would have let outside people thought that it was vice versa, that we were watching you change, but actually the audience was the one which was changed more than you.
Yeah.
Was it on purpose?
Mm-hmm.
And did you have think about different scenarios depending on how the people would have reacted, and you could not necessarily figure out fully in advance?
Yeah. I was interested in, actually, like if the spectators were coming in that space, it was my space and I was in control there. You know, even though the aesthetics was me as the prisoner or me as the sort of victim or whatever, actually that's not what was happening at all. That was, you know, controlling the space. You know, the idea that as well, that I was the sort of sick body, the abject body, and I was the one in this sort of space of contamination that was taking control and really running the space. That was really important for me. And in terms of planning the whole experience, you know, I had fairly set tasks that I was going to do, so of course I didn't really know how the spectators were going to react to everything. So everything was sort of loose and flexible, that I might, depending on how people reacted, that I might change certain things or push things a little bit further or hold back on certain things. But the mood in the space was really sort of joyous and playful, which...
Did you expect that playfulness or not?
Not quite to the extent that it was, but I knew that some of the stuff I was doing was going to be playful, but I didn't expect the sort, you know, quite as much sort of from the spectators. So I really enjoyed that element of it. I thought that I would have to push it a little bit further in order for people to, you know, kind of come out of the shell in that way, but people were really engaged and like, really open immediately. So the first time I bit somebody, I went in very tentatively and gave this man a little bite, and he didn't react. So then I tried it on the next one, you know, and it became, I could hear people giggling on the far side, and that seemed to, I don't know, make everything okay, or that people hear someone else laughing, and then they went, oh, okay, you know, this is okay somehow, that he's biting me. And people then even started offering up their arms to me as I came around.
But obviously what wouldn't be remembered is the biting part where you start biting people and eventually they bought you back. So why did you design or decided for this element? And what is your reaction afterwards?
Well, firstly, you know, that whole first section was really important for me in leading up to actually biting. You know, for me it just wouldn't have worked if they came in and I was immediately biting, but actually this whole first hour where I was in quite a lot of discomfort or, you know, pain and hardship, it was important because also what I did during that was kind of set myself up as by the end I was covered in sort of slime, the green paint was on my face like slime and my lip was bleeding from where I'd pierced it. Set myself as this sort of othered figure in the middle, you know, quite separate from everybody else. And then I wanted to go from that position of being the sort of quite disgusting, abject figure, to think about then how I like interact and come to bite at that point. So not just me looking, you know, like well washed and okay, but actually to kind of, they've seen me coughing and spitting the mucus, they've seen me piercing my lip and bleeding and, you know, sweating and doing all of this activity, and then how that leads into, you know, that sort of a disgusting and like visibly sick figure coming and biting. You know, and part of the idea came from this figure of the zombie, and, you know, that was, you know, the starting point for the whole piece, was this idea of the zombie as this thing that is dead but also alive, like the walking dead. It's, you know, it's the thing that's both alive and dead at the same time, and it's the sort of most abject figure that you can have, because it's sort of human but not really human. It's a human that's falling apart, it's rotten as it walks, and it's completely dangerous because it has the potential to infect everybody else, which is, as I said, was one of the things I was interested in, this infection. And that's done through the, like, the biting of a human's skin, of a human's flesh. So that, like, desire to eat another human. And I was interested in how that figure of the zombie really, like, chimed with me in the way I was thinking around chronic illness. As, you know, there was cystic fibrosis, where the life expectancy is so short that it's, you kind of, the idea of living with, like, the shadow of death over you, and how the zombie actually might be useful for thinking about somebody who is alive but has this chronic illness that makes them kind of abject in some ways with the bodily fluids in the coffin, and how that, you know, is both, I occupy like a space of being alive, absolutely alive, but also with this kind of shadow of death.
Always. Because all this happens within an art context, and because all this is somehow scripted. Do you think that implicitly you get the audience consent to the experiment?
I think, you know, the way we talked about earlier in the interview, this idea of being complicit in the work, that actually the spectators, when they come through there, are sort of not signing a contract, but they're kind of by being present, they're adhering to some kind of contract. Yeah, and it's not as though I was locking them in a box and, you know, chipping poisonous animals in. You know, that they're kind of consenting to this sort of, in order to be there, they sort of trust me that I'm not gonna do, you know, the worst could happen is they get covered in paint, I suppose. But there's a kind of consent when they cross that border and come into the space, I think. And because of the nature of the duration of work, then if they want to take that consent away, they can leave and do that, and that's okay. That doesn't, you know, that's not a problem. So it's, you know, I think by being in the space, they are consenting to the things that happen in that space.
And also yesterday during the panel, after the performance, someone said that the biting could be one of the ethical issue, and I think it's more one of the legal issue.
Yeah, ethics is, you know, there's an interesting ethical element to that, with biting another human being and the idea of consent of doing that. you know, and other things that might go on behind that, you know, around like the fear of what might be contracted through that biting. But I think, you know, maybe the ethics of the biting is absolutely within that idea of consent, and whether or not the person being bitten and the biter are kind of consenting in that act. I guess then the legality is something quite different, particularly because here in the UK there's still like a bizarre law that is in place around... The law I think was brought in the late 70s or early 80s, which says you're not allowed to release the law on your own body. So essentially, if I said to you, will you cut me, and you cut me, you could still be done for grievous bodily harm for cutting me, even though I'd given consent. So I suppose the legality of it, even though it isn't necessarily still used that often, the legality of that is like more complicated, because consent, we don't have the right to consent to somebody harming our bodies, even though our bodies are ours. We don't have the consent to do that.
But we were saying with Jared Das, with the curator we worked with you, why is it that people bought it back and do not provide a care? And at the same time, there's this guy at the end, when we were after, in the discussion, we said that he was, you gave us so much and he thought he had to give you back.
Yeah.
And if biting was your language you had chosen for this performance, then he had to engage with this language.
Yeah.
And I thought this was very moving.
That's a really nice way to put it. Because that's what the invitation, I think, you know, the invitation wasn't come up and do something to my body. The invitation was come and bite me, in a way. So people, you know, talk about how he played the game, or people, you know, the way that he, like, so sweetly put it, you know, if they wanted to give something back, that the thing I was asking for was to be bitten, so that he, you know, he sort of spoke that language. You know, he went through it that way, even if it's not what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
This chap talked about language, you know, the language that my work operates in is within one of sufferance and endurance and hardship. You know, but I think within that, it's really about, because it's about kind of inflicting it up on my own body. It comes back to those ideas of what actually working with those kinds of things, with pain or with brutality, might do, what it might allow in terms of agency, or like a striving towards agency for the body that's inflicting it upon itself. So it's not the same as the brutality of going out and stabbing somebody in the street, or, you know, biting somebody on the street, because actually it's within an environment in which I'm, you know, I've created a sort of space in which that can happen, and that can function in a really different way. And so that's the way, you know, and that's, if I'm speaking about things like illness, like death, then the way in which I want to do that is through kind of visceral images, or to talk about something so kind of difficult, it seems as though endurance is a sort of perfect kind of metaphor for that. In a way that other things wouldn't work in the same way. So, you know, at the start we talked about what endurance does, and I talked about the politics of it. But I think what else it does is acts as a kind of metaphor for like a life lived within illness. You know, so the endurance over 3 hours or over 5 hours or 10 hours or whatever becomes like a kind of smaller version of actually like the endurance of life somehow, with illness or just without, you know, the endurance of life as it is anyway.
Pastille et à sucer pour l'oreille. Candy.